I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 10th of March, 2020. On the podcast today, Kyle Friel, Executive Chairman of Open Orphan. And Kyle discusses the positive results from their Flu V vaccine and the development of the world's first human coronavirus challenge study model. Plus, I also have on the podcast Stephen Hemsley, Executive Chairman of Franchise Brands, FRAN is ticker there, and Stephen explains the business model and outlines some of the highlights from their latest final results. Plus, I have Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, covers this week's markets, gold and Bitcoin news. And as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see both these lists, top 10 versions of both these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk. If you do receive an RNS via the app, which is free to download, by the way, and you like the contents, hit that thumbs up icon in the app there, and it could feature in one of these lists.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Cahill Friel, Executive Chairman of Open Orphan, ORPH ticker there. Cahill, thanks for joining me again.
Justin, good morning. It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, is it quite frustrating that the global markets had their biggest sell-off the last couple of days, or yesterday at least, and in the middle of it, you're releasing decent news?
Yeah, just look, such is life. But look, the great part is, as I say, if we keep doing as we promised, and I think we are, we'll be in good shape in a couple of weeks. Yesterday morning, yeah, it was frustrating. We had a call from Reuters. We were, I think, 11:30. Open Orphan was the only share in Europe that was up. And then we have one only share in the whole of Europe. They were going to run an article. And 10 minutes later, one of our legacy shareholders from HVIVO, an institution, started to dump shares. And unfortunately, if he was sensible, he might have let the share settle and he could have sold out at a higher price today. But look, that's life.
Okay, let's go into this bit of news then. So two bits of news. First of all, development of the world's first challenge study model and publication of positive results in the journal there. So let's go into the first one from yesterday, the challenge study model. What's happening here?
Look, Justin, we've launched yesterday the world's first commercial coronavirus challenge study model. Mm-hmm. Now, there is some more work to do with, but we're making very clear, going forward, we're a profitable pharma service company. All development costs associated with that and all developments with our Flu V will be funded by third parties. In the coronavirus challenge study model, we have a number, quite a significant number of Chinese pharmaceutical clients bent in our back ways, really keen to get involved in funding that. So this is exciting. We thought, i.e. HVIVO, our Open Orphan subsidiary, thought about developing this project 2 years ago. 2 years ago, coronavirus, you and I, nobody heard about it. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of work done on it, but it was put suspended. And in recent weeks, that project's been back to a fore, and it's very exciting because we're now helping in the global race to find, and trust me, a cure. A vaccine and retrovirals will be found for coronavirus. It's only a matter of time. And there's nothing like a crisis to speed this process up.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, and you've also got positive results from your phase 2B field study of flu V vaccine. Now, someone did say to me yesterday, said, I thought, you know, Open Orphan was just a service company and they're not getting involved in the high risk, you know, high cost of developing drugs. So take us through this, if you could, because this is a legacy asset, isn't it?
Correct, Justin. I've always said hVIVO was a sleeping giant. It had 113 million invested into it in the last 6 years by unfortunate one or two of those shareholders who were selling yesterday who were just sick of it. But from us and the new shareholders, I think it's the most amazing opportunity in my lifetime. We acquired it for 13, that's one tenth, and we got 2 million cash. And we got all these wonderful assets. The flu V, I've said, is our lottery ticket. We're not paying for it. Any development cost will be out-licensed to third-party pharma companies. So I've always said, this is the lottery ticket, and this may be the time to scratch that card. So what we're doing, this fabulous results, we had to publish yesterday because the results were published in this international journal, so we couldn't sit in them. And again, the timing's just sometimes one is lucky in life and sometimes one is unlucky, and this is just very lucky timing. But I reassure the market, we are a profitable services company. We're going to be imminently profitable. There's been a lot of cutbacks. There's been a lot of news flow. Last week, we announced a deal in the region of 10 million, 3.2 million up front, and another 7 million later this year. So that knocks us well down the road to profitability. So Flu V, it's the world's, one of the world's first universal flu vaccines. It's radically different. It's a jab you take once every 10 years and it immunizes you against all flus. So look, it's interesting, it's exciting, but I want to reassure shareholders, this is a lottery ticket. We're not going to be spending any more funds on it. That has a big part of the 113 million that the legacy hVIVO shareholders spent was on this. And we've now got the benefit of being honest with you, like a lottery ticket, we can acquire this asset for nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's recommended this now go to, phase 3, is that right?
Correct, it's done phase 1, it's done stunning results now, these results published today. Now, for the scientific community, it's above my pay grade. Mm-hmm. The results are fabulous, it's 100% efficacy, correct myself, nothing's 100%, but it actually hit all its endpoints that was required in the trials. Mm-hmm. It does need to go into the phase 3 trial, but we are now in a position, they did try, 18 months ago, to sound out the market, big pharma companies then, there was lack of an interest in a flu V, in a universal flu vaccine. But guess what? A lot has changed in 12 months, and we would be very optimistic in the coming weeks and months. We'll be announcing a partner who's going to bring that right through to phase 3 trials. But it won't be us. We're going to focus on delivering profitable services, more deals like last Friday's, where we're going to do 3, 4, 5 million deals. This is not going to be little rinky-dinky deals. So no, exciting times.
Yeah, yeah. And so what happens with this vaccine then? So someone else will fund the costing because, of course, it's very expensive clinical trials, phase 3. But you will still... So how much, what percentage of that asset will you own if it gets to commercialization? Do you know, or will you be diluted down?
Absolutely, no. Look, we own 49% of this asset, okay, along with our partners in the SEEK group. So that's a pretty good starting point. Like the coronavirus challenge study model we announced yesterday, we're not giving away the IP. We're going to get and give the investors a royalty on sales. So something similar, except we will receive the royalty on sales in this case. So that's how it'll model. So if this works, the upside could be pretty spectacular. We won't rule out the option of actually selling the asset as well. That's a possibility. Mm-hmm. Nothing like a big chunk of cash hitting the balance sheet that we can share with all investors. If big chunks of cash comes in, we won't be hoarding it. This is a profitable services company. Should not need cash. So any exciting cash that comes in from that lottery ticket will be handed out to all our shareholders in equal amounts.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Okay, all right. Well, as always, Cahill, let's have those three reasons. If someone right now is listening and they like the sound of the progress you're making but are not yet following the story, please give them three reasons to hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Absolutely, Justin. I think we asked people to have faith in us. We were an unknown quantity. We're delivering. We said we were going to do a lot of things. We were going to integrate the sleeping giant HVIVO. Guess what? We're wakening this giant up rather nicely in this last week. The second one, we're heavily invested. I was very happy about money where mouth is, as are my colleagues. So the managing teams are aligned, and that's why I say if major cash comes in from the flu V, if something exciting happens in weeks and months, it'll come back to all shareholders, myself included. And third one, I think sometimes you've got to stay busy. Margaret Thatcher once said, the harder I work, the luckier I get. So I think in the current market, that's what we're all facing. The harder we work, I think the luckier we're getting. And that is very clearly happening now in Open Orphan, HVIVO. There's a lot of people working very hard, and we're getting some lucky breaks, finally, after HVIVO having had a torrid 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm. All the stuff. Kyle, good to chat to you. Like you say, hopefully got some news coming out, so no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Stephen Hemsley, Executive Chairman of Franchise Brands. Ticker there is FRAN, Fran. Stephen, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure.
I'm sure there's many people who followed you in your business career and are aware of the company. I'm a bit aware of the company. But for people not familiar with Franchise Brands, Stephen, could you just summarise what the business is about, please?
Yes. Franchise Brands was established by myself and Nigel Ray in 2008. We're focused on building market-leading businesses in selected consumer segments, primarily using a franchise model. The group currently has a combined network of over 450 franchisees across 5 brands. Our focus is on established brands which can benefit from our shared support services, management expertise, and group resources. The largest brand is Metrorod, which is a market leader in the commercial drainage sector. In 2019, we acquired Willow Pumps, which represents an important step in expanding Metrorod and its sister company, Metro Plum, in the range of services it offers to the commercial market. The B2B, B2C brands are Chips Away, a smart repair company, Oven Clean, which cleans domestic ovens, and Barking Mad, a dog home boarding company. Mm-hmm. Franchise Brands is profitable, cash generative, has a progressive dividend policy, and we have each of the brands has a long trading history with a combined history of over 125 years. Mm-hmm. Franchise Brands employs 250 people across 3 principal locations in Macclesfield, Kidderminster, and Aylesford in Kent.
Yeah, and do you know what? It's probably worth going into your history, because you didn't just stumble upon this kind of model. You've had a lot of success before. So take us through what you've done previously, Stephen.
Well, I was one of the founders of Domino's Pizza in the UK. I started there as CFO, floated the company in 99. I was then chief exec for 9 years, then executive chairman, and until Christmas last year, non-executive chairman, when I retired after 22 years with the business.
Yeah, so when did you think, the idea for Franchise Brands is obviously very successful, getting Domino's Pizza up and running in that kind of model. So when did you think, hang on a sec, I've got an idea here. When did it come to you?
Well, actually, it fell into our laps. Nigel and I were invested in an AIM-listed company called My Home, mm-hmm. which went bust in 2008. Yeah. And one of my current colleagues' husband introduced the opportunity to buy it back out of administration, which we did. And since then, we've been, to some extent, repairing the damage that was done by previous management. And then we floated it in 2016 with a view to expanding by acquisition, and since then we've made several acquisitions and intend to carry on doing that on a very selective basis.
Yeah. And so is it back end of 2016 sort of started, and the share price was around about 40 pence there, went up to about £1 and sort of traded in the range there. But it's recently taken off, but of course you had a big market sell-off, but you've had some good figures out, recent results are out. So take us through some of the highlights of the financial results, if you could, Stephen.
The year to December 19 was a particularly good year for us. Revenue up 24%, adjusted EBITDA up 29% to 5.2 million. One of the aspects of a franchise business is that they are highly cash generative, so our cash conversion was 91% of our adjusted EBITDA. EPS up to 4.3 pence per share, and maybe interestingly for investors, the dividend was up 42% to just under a penny per share. So a very good year, which was really driven by the success of Metro Rod and the franchisees there. When we bought the business, we had a franchise community that was somewhat disengaged, having been owned by private equity for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And we introduced them a new strategy, which we called Vision 2023, which gave them far more responsibility for their business. And since then, they've really embraced that. And in 2019, system sales, which is their underlying sales rather than our corporate turnover, increased by 14%. Mm. And now almost half of them have annual sales of over £1 million. So we're very pleased with the progress that's been made in that that part of the business.
Yeah, and like I said, your growth is going very well. And more to come?
Oh, yes, lots more to come. I mean, the Vision 2023 strategy is really only 18 months old now, and we have significant plans to both expand in what we do by a broader range of customers, but also more particularly expand the range of services we offer to the commercial market. So the acquisition of Willow Pumps in 2019 was an important part of that, which now allows us to offer above and below ground pumps to our drainage customers. And that's very important for particular groups, like, for example, facilities management, mm-hmm. Who want to limit the number of suppliers they have visiting the commercial premises they manage. And we have one or two other ideas of how we're going to further extend that range of services, which may involve buying other direct labor companies and then using those as a means of helping our franchisees expand into those areas.
Yeah, yeah. And what's the ambition here then, Stephen?
I built a company in Domino's that was valued at $1.5 billion. Franchise Brands, when we floated, was $15 million. We're now up to $100 million. I'd like to build another £500 million company.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And and you see that as, obviously, nothing's ever easy, but you see that as very doable?
I think we have a very sound strategy. We have some very good people. I think by organic growth, which we have a very good plan to execute, and selective acquisitions, it is entirely possible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Okay, Stephen, well, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of the progress you're making but are not yet following the story, please give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think I would say experience management. There are at least six members of the senior management team who were with me at Domino's Pizza. We built a £1.5 billion company there, and as I've just explained, we've only just got started at Franchise Brands. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be a good reason to invest. Mm-hmm. We've got a strategy that's built on both organic growth and earnings enhancing acquisitions, which we will fairly prudently fund with debt and equity, and I think that is a highly executable plan. Mm-hmm. And I think finally we have a progressive dividend policy that will see dividends rise with earnings, subject to the priority of managing prudent levels of debt.
Marvellous stuff. Stephen, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
I hope so. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is trader, and he's the crypto trader, of course. Glenn Goodman, he's got a book out if you want to search for it on all good bookstores, online, offline, sidelines, down, whatever. Glenn, you all right?
Yes.
I couldn't think of offline, online, anything else. And sideline, across the line, over the tracks and the tracks. But yes, so this far, what have you been doing this week? Because, of course, Bitcoin has been a bit, it's not acting like a safe haven asset. In fact, gold isn't really. It did have a little ramp up. It's a funny relationship, gold. And I did say about this in the last financial crisis, gold started tracking the stock market down for the first couple of months. And I think this is where people, apparently, I don't know about margin calls too much, I'm not into that, but people were receiving margin calls on their stocks instead of liquidate their gold positions, apparently, just to fill out those margin calls to sell, whatever, and so that affected gold. But then it started going the other way, and gold started going north, and the stock market started coming down, you know. So, but Bitcoin at the moment is not acting like a safe haven, really. So gold was flat yesterday, just didn't move. When the big sell-off happened, gold just didn't move, you know. But Bitcoin, it's falling, isn't it, you know?
Yep. I got to say, Bitcoin has been a bit disappointing. I'm a bit disappointed with you, Bitcoin, because, it's not acting like a safe haven asset. It has become, to some degree, correlated with the rise and fall, mainly fall, of the stock market over the past couple of weeks. I was skeptical about that argument for a while, because when Bitcoin started its fall, it was sort of it was not in alignment with the stock market, and it felt like a kind of natural fall because it had been rising for several months. You'll remember I bought at 7,500, and then it got all the way up to 10,500, and it was sort of time for a correction anyway. But I got to say, over the past week or so, it's definitely looking like it's been correlated with the falls in the stock market. So we can't call it a safe haven to run to, but like you were just saying off air, you know, gold is there's a big question mark over gold as a safe haven as well. And I've got to say, you know, I'm a chartist and I follow the charts, but I kind of fell for the fundamental story of gold being a good hedge against falls in stock markets. I bought lots of gold in sort of recent months, and I did quite well out of gold. But then gold kind of stopped being correlated. It stopped having a negative correlation with the stock market. And while the stock market was collapsing, the price of gold suddenly collapsed as well, which caused me to kind of have a bit of a cognitive dissonance situation and go, whoa, what's going on here? And I quickly sold my gold holdings because there was such a rapid fall about a week ago in the price of gold. It looked like it was really collapsing. And I got quite scared and I thought, oh, I better sell it. And it's annoying, actually, because like I say, I'm a chartist, and if I'd followed the charts properly, I would have sold it and got out with a really decent profit. But I left it too long because I was kind of all caught up in that fundamental story.
Hang on. You're acting like a chartist still. Because the fundamentals for gold are still very good, and you're not holding long enough. That's the problem.
I mean, you know, I'm perfectly happy to get back into gold. Let's face it, it's been very disappointing. Look at the price performance.
Over what period?
Since the beginning of this year, it's gone up from 1550 on the 1st of January to 1650 now. And it's just like, really? Is that the best that it can manage? If it's supposedly negatively correlated to the stock market, look, I know that
it's not negatively correlated exactly, but
no, I know. Well, it's barely negatively correlated at all. My treasury bonds investments, now they're negatively correlated, right? I bought a lot of treasury bonds. I did extremely well out of treasury bonds. It's completely wiped out any losses that I had in stocks that I've held on to. Well, I've now sold most of my stocks, but I was holding on to some for a while and just allowing the treasury bonds rise to cancel those out. And I've, you know, overall I've made money because of this. Treasury bonds did what they were supposed to do. Gold, is a bit meh.
Well, no, hang on. In gold, since the start of the year, you've got 9%. Considering we've had a massive sell-off in the stock market, 9%, most people would die for that if you compared to their stock portfolio. You know, so a 9% rise against, you know, what, 20% loss is good. So it's probably outperform stocks by about, you know, 20-30% almost, depending on what stocks you hold. But Fundamentally, it's good because I said yesterday, don't sell on a down day. I mean, when you get a massive big sell-off like that, if you're an investor, this is, I'm not talking about traders, an investor, don't sell on a down day where you're talking about historical challenges, where you can actually compare the data to other historical falls, because the market makers mark everything down regardless. You'll get a really bad price, and the chances are quite high, the probability is quite high that there will be a big bounce next couple of days. And it always happens, and I did tweet out, some of the biggest market falls have always, pretty much always, there's a 98% chance of a bounce for the next 1 or 2 days. So if you want to sell, sell on that up day. And we are in a bear market. We FTSE hit a bear market yesterday. I do believe we're heading towards recession, but you know, recessions, like a stock market, doesn't go straight down because the default is to want to go up. It's to want
really
to go up.
Yeah, yeah, so 5% as I speak.
Well, exactly. So the bear market rallies are more aggressive than the bull market rallies.
So but I'm talking about the US market there. Yeah, FTSE's up 3.5%.
People shouldn't make the mistake of thinking now everything's hunky-dory and start buying lots of stocks. No, the bottom is nowhere near in my mind. Over the next couple of months, we'll rally, we'll fall, we'll rally. But net-net, I think the market will be lower in 3 months' time or 4 months. I don't know what time frame it'll be. But the market within the next 6 months or so will be lower than where we are now. And the bottom will be down there somewhere. All I'm saying is if you want to sell, if you want to exit some positions because you're bearish, do it on these up days because, like I said, bear market rallies are more aggressive than bull markets, and you may as well sell and try and get half a decent price, you know, rather than just take the market makers, you know, slash down sort of fire sale price. I just think the biggest thing now, this is a bit of a bull trap. I think people are going to start thinking if the coronavirus figures even go down, the economies, Italy is absolutely, to see how BA just cancelled all flights to Italy. Italy is pretty much shut down. It's one of the biggest economies in Europe. And I think, you know, we've yet to see, there's a lag. So we're going to have all these companies now coming out. So Q1 was written off pretty much. We can write that off, Q1. Q2 will be affected because, you know, all these companies reporting that have an effect or exposure to this will show that in Q2. So we may have a recession here. Q1, Q2 may be in recession territory. And then the markets would take a leg lower because of that, I think, you know?
I mean, there's a big question in my mind, just today, for example, today, Tuesday, about
what day is it?
just for anyone listening on Wednesday, you know, they might want to be reminded that we had this conversation on Tuesday. Anyway, point is, you know, we've got a massive rally, or historically, you know, normally it would be considered a massive rally in the FTSE this morning. One thing that makes me slightly dubious and inclined to agree with you that it's, you know, that we're in a bear market and this is just a kind of leg up within that, a little rally within that. One thing that makes me inclined to think that is the volume. Now, volume at, you know, when you get a big bottom.
Ooh, you naughty man. Yeah. You couldn't take it downhill, haven't you?
When you get a really big bottom, you get a huge volume accompanying it. You get massive amounts of trading, and that is usually a pretty reliable sign that you've hit a bottom. It works the same way at a top as well. You get a big price rise at the top, and it's usually accompanied by a huge slug of unusually high volume. Now, yesterday and this morning, we have not had that big volume either in America or in Britain. And so even though we've got a huge price rise historically huge price rise this morning, it doesn't strike me as a proper bottom because of that volume. Having said that, anything can happen in this crazy market. So, don't blame me if suddenly prices are 20% higher this time next week, because who knows what people are going to do. It could just take a tiny bit of good news about the coronavirus. And we've had a tiny bit of good news, which is that China is claiming, whether truthfully or not, we don't know, but claiming that, you know, that numbers of cases are stabilizing and, you know, possibly even falling and, you know, everything's looking nice over there. They would say that, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
But, you know, nonetheless, a piece of good news like that, particularly if it came out of America, would possibly give stocks an absolutely massive boost. Though, as I said at the beginning of this conversation, I'm largely on the sidelines now. I've had my fun. I've made a bit of money with treasury bonds and all the rest of it. I've sold nearly all my stocks. Not all of them. There are a few that I've held on to because I just sort of like the way they're performing. But I've sold most of them. And this kind of volatility up and down like crazy is not really a great investing environment. And when it comes to stocks and shares, I guess I'm a bit more of an investor than I am a trader. I tend to hold for the long term if I can. So I'm kind of sticking on the sidelines. Would you like to hear about an individual stock that is very interesting? Me and you don't normally talk about such things, but
yes, go on. What's
have you been watching the trials and tribulations of Inovio Pharmaceuticals Inc.?
No, I never trade American stocks.
Well, you've got to hear about this one.
Go
because
on.
They are developing a vaccine for coronavirus, of all things.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously everybody's going so crazy about Inovio Pharmaceuticals.
Aren't they one of many companies in this?
But they say that they're in the lead.
They're the most advanced. Okay.
They say it took them 3 hours to synthesize a vaccine from some DNA profile that the Chinese sent over to them. They then used their computers and designed a vaccine within 3 hours. They say they're going to be testing on humans in April, this next month. But when asked, you know, when would the vaccine actually be ready, that's when it all gets a little bit more woolly because there are obviously so many hoops to jump through. The end of the year is kind of the very, very earliest that anything exciting could happen by the sounds of it. But even so, of course, their shares have gone ballistic. So from over the past week or so, the price has gone from $4 up to $20. It's quintupled.
Yeah.
Quintupled. But then yesterday, a skeptical research firm came out and said, we've heard all this stuff from Inovio before. Don't you remember they were saying they had were going to have a Zika virus vaccine? And don't you remember they said they were going to have an Ebola virus vaccine? And sure enough, I did a bit of research and, you know, Google.
Isn't it amazing how short people's memories are on these things?
I went back on Google. I watched the CNBC interview with the chief executive of the company from 2016, the CNBC interview. And the presenters are basically accusing him, going, whenever there's an infectious virus that scares the hell out of the whole world, you're always Mr. Johnny on the spot, aren't you, with a proposed vaccine?
Yeah.
And he was like, well, no, we take it all very seriously. You know, this is a proper biotech firm with hundreds of employees, including a woman, Dr. Kate something.
A woman? They got a woman involved?
Stop.
Oh, you don't want that. You don't want that.
I don't like that. That's her.
Who?
Oh, hold on. I've got the woman. The woman.
You got her with you?
Dr.
What do you mean?
Broderick.
Hold on. What is it?
I was going to play you a bit of audio, but
I don't know what happened there. I couldn't hear it, but...
All right, okay. Well, hold on. It's what I was trying to play was this. See if you can hear this.
The genetic sequence of the virus from the Chinese
authorities.
Can you hear that? And we immediately uploaded that sequence
uploaded.
To the algorithm, which generates the design of the vaccine.
Okay, so that's, hold on, that's...
That's who, yes.
Give me a second, I'm just plugging myself back in. Right, yeah, that's Dr. Kate Broderick from the firm. She's been working there 13 years.
Algorithm.
And she's very plausible indeed, you know, she's... Scottish and everything, and she is. Here's the thing: she's been profiled very heavily. She's in Elle magazine doing a profile this month, for example. You know, she's kind of like the face of their whole vaccine effort, and it's kind of slightly worrying because the company is well known for, as I say, always being Johnny on the spot with a proposed vaccine that, so far, has never actually come to fruition for any of these diseases.
Mm-hmm.
And they raise loads of money quite regularly. They have big cash balances. And obviously, the PR efforts help somewhere in that. So I don't want to accuse them of being mercenary in any way, because I don't know them that well. But let's just say it makes me feel slightly uncomfortable. And I'm not the only one, because yesterday, the shares plummeted more than 50% from their high of $20 down to, well, at its low, about $8.50. And now they're kind of, before the American Open, they're at about $10. Now, I mean, and I'm kind of torn because on one hand, I'm thinking, I don't like the way that they never actually managed to produce a working drug.
Well, no, have they? Have they ever at all done it? Has anyone ever asked them? So what happened to the other bit, the other hot, you know, vaccines? What's happened to those? Just on the back burner now because they're not as hot anymore?
Well, not on the back burner. They're still in the pipeline. They've got 14 drugs, I believe, currently in their pipeline. They just have a long pipeline.
Yeah. Have you seen our pipeline? Basically, it's like a drain, basically, a drain pipe, and they just shoved everything in there. There's no more interest in it. That's their pipeline. It's actually a real, a tangible drain pipe. Yeah, everything that's not of interest anymore is just shoved in there, basically. Do you want to see our pipeline? Is it just from the back?
Oh, my Lord. I don't know. I don't know what to think, because the problem is, they've only got a market cap at the moment of just over $1 billion, which is not huge. So if they do develop the first coronavirus vaccine, then their shares, I mean,
what's the chance of that, though? They've not done it for Ebola and SARS and all the rest of them, so what's the chance of them doing this?
You see, Dr. Kate Broderick sounds so plausible when you listen to her.
We've just got the vaccine, but an algorithm, and that's come up with something else, that's right, and that's how we come up with it. It's fantastic. It's our algorithm.
I was trying to work out for a while what accent you were doing there. And then
I was as well. I'll get there. I'm heading towards Scotland somewhere. But they can't just say it's your algorithm and get away with it, you know? That's basically like the vice president at a wedding disco. Algorithm.
Very good.
But no, you can't just say that, can you? It's our algorithm and just, you know, just float it away with that and say, yeah, no, it's very complex. It's an algorithm. That's all you need to know. Because you've done nothing. But just, you know what?
People are always impressed. You're quite right, by algorithms.
Do you know what? This is my thought. In the last few, I'd say, I've been evolving. I mean, September 2018, I started moving away from pre-revenue oil and gas stocks, pretty much, or resource company stocks, towards companies that are looking at, you know, heading towards profits, and because those were like penny stocks, exploration. And at the time, you know, it was quite good because before that, the last, say, 5 years before that, you know, the economies were growing, China was growing, and all this stuff. And so, you know, China consumes most of the world's resources, or half of them anyway, half the world's resources, commodities, to grow. So it was good, quite bullish for them. But it was getting harder and harder, and I moved away from it. And now, generally, I've gone almost to the point where I will not look at anything now that's not generating cash. And that is my filter. Any company I look at now has to be profitable, has to be growing that profit. Because in my mind, if you want to catch, okay, there are exceptions to the rule, but if you want to catch a fast, you know, growing company, and it's based, and it'll sustainable, and it'll last for years. And I'm talking about the Boohoo's, the JD Sports that have 10 bagged over the last 5 years. You know, and people say they've done well, but they've done it on growing profit, and that's in mind. That's proof. So rather than just trying to find, because I think it's quite exciting for small cap startups with good ideas. You think, that's a good idea that can make billions, but There's no evidence that'll work out. It's an idea, you know? The proof is in the profit. When you start, any company that's done very well, from, you know, Microsoft to Amazon, all the big companies, their revenue went through the ceiling, and then their profit followed. They had, you know, compound annual growth of revenue, then profit. Now, just filter for companies like that. You know then, they're not lying. Like this company now, this biological company, this pharma company you're talking about, it's a good idea they come up with all the time. Yeah, we're all jumping on the next hot sort of virus. But the proof is in the sales, isn't it? If they do get that, they may spike up and spike down. And that's the trouble. You get companies that have these ideas, and their share price is very much, you know, a trader's dream. It spikes up, spikes down. But if you want to invest in a long-term, sustainable, you know, value-generating company, then you have to follow the money, full stop. That is the proof in the concept.
Well, Just to play devil's advocate.
Oh, where's the devil again? He sent you along again, is he? He's very busy. He's busy with coronavirus.
The devil, then I'm being devil's advocate. I'm going to say,
you're going to miss out on Teslas and stuff like that
this time, right? First of all, Inovio has met with, has been to the White House to talk about.
Trump has anyone in the White House? You can be a Russian lap dancer and get the White House.
Yeah, but they're talking about speeding stuff up, right?
That's, in fact, that's... before I forget,
Hang on, before I forget,
have you seen the series Dirty Money on Netflix?
I haven't yet.
No. It's very good. Watch it. It's about Farm Valiant and all that, all big cons. And the last one I just watched was about Trump. Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. How this it's called the Confidence Man. Just look it up. Dirty Money, Confidence Man, being a confidence trickster. And I think he's the most successful confidence trickster in the world. There's been lawsuits, hundreds of them, left, right and centre, about him just tucking up people. It basically licenses his brand out to everyone. He gets paid to it and these companies just collapse, basically. But literally, he just charges them. That's it. It's phenomenal. And since he's been president, he can't do it. He said he's put the business in the hands of his son and all that stuff. But he's still involved, and it's phenomenal. But anyway, that's him being involved with Russian oligarchs and all that stuff is in there. But it's just phenomenal. Just worth looking up. And you think, how is this guy? I remember there was a time when it was laughable, the suggestion that Trump could be president. Now he is president. But look at some of these documentaries. And these people are good journalists. You know, they're not just throwing mud at him, trying to make him stick. It's not from the Democratic Party, but it's worth looking up. So it's called the Dirty Money series on Netflix. Okay. It's called The Confidence Man.
I will.
Anyway,
I
sorry.
Watch that.
They've gone
That's
to the White
right.
House. Sorry. Go on.
But just a quick tangent because of what you just said. Did you see Donald Trump's tweet yesterday about coronavirus, where he repeated that talking point that
flu.
We were kind of rubbishing several weeks ago? Yeah, like months ago even. He says, so last year, 37,000 Americans died from the common flu. It averages between 27,000 and 70,000 per year. Nothing is shut down. Life and the economy go on. At this moment, there are 546 confirmed cases of coronavirus with 22 deaths. Think about that! Exclamation mark. Yeah. And then there's a reply from a doctor.
Yeah.
And he's a reply from a prominent physician who just says, in inverted commas, it's just the flu, bro. Donald Trump, President of the United States. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, that's so true, isn't it? That's what Donald Trump is saying. It's just the flu, bro. Yeah. It's not a big deal. And it's like, what are you talking about? Yeah, we've been talking here for weeks and months, as have no doubt all of his advisors, about the exponential trend in the rise of cases. Mm. You know, initially, I remember, if you don't mind me saying, you were a little bit skeptical about the rise in cases and whether it would continue. And I was saying, yeah, but look at that curve. You know, and
no, I still am. I mean, people are still
the
starting.
The curve is still exponential. It's still rising fast. Hey, listen, look at Italy.
I fill in about 25 cells of data every morning on the coronavirus. So Italy's a worry. People are starting to suggest it's only a matter of time. In fact, it was quite funny last night. This guy said to me, we're just 7 days behind Italy. And I said, in fact, let me get it up for you. Let me get the my spreadsheet I'm talking about. So if it's all done.
I'll get back to Inovo Pharmaceuticals in a moment.
Yeah, sorry. And he said to me, and I'm just opening it right here. He said to me, yeah, but that was 7 days ago, Italy. And I said, no, in fact, let me get the figures for Italy. I said, 7 days ago, Italy had something like 2,000 cases. We are still only on 319, you know?
Yeah.
321 we're on.
But it's the trend,
And then he came back and said, okay, 10 days ago, I said they had 888, we had zero. We're not anywhere near. I don't know what happened there. I mean, you know, there's a suggestion that someone from Wuhan was sent of it. In fact, some people are suggesting it started in Italy. The guy from... and also, Northern Italy, like I said, the problem with Northern Italy is cold. There's lots of skiing going on. Lots of people indoors. So spreading the virus very quickly. They didn't really know about it. But it's not the norm. I mean, people are saying we'll be there in 7 days. No, we won't. South Korea... It was that church thing, that sort of sect was involved in that, in close doors. But South Korea and Italy are not the norm. You get high, medium, and below the norm. And we are just below.
We are at the moment, but we're not really doing anything to prevent spread.
Hang on, we had two increases day before yesterday. It's not a lot. We had. It's like 46 days before that. That's not massive, is it?
It's because we're coming from such a low base, but we're still...
Two! and two!
As of this morning, I think we're still allowing 60
million
planes to fly in from Milan, aren't we?
No, everyone shut down. There's 60 million people in our country. We got 320 cases and 5 deaths. No, we're not exponentially growing. In fact, it's slowing down, if anything, ours is. We are not going to be in Italy, I don't think. Look at these figures as yet. I'm not saying we won't. I'm saying I think by now we'd have seen a bit of an explosion. Because it's been out there for, like, over, what, since January. It's like December, late December, it's been out there since. So why aren't we exploding as fast as Italy? So I don't understand why that is. Why aren't we? And all I can say is someone said to me, someone thinks that could have been one of the centre points or one of the people who flew into that area. And, of course, it's a very rich area. It's very cold in Northern Italy, though, because lots of ski resorts there. Said lots of people inside. So maybe that's something to do with it.
Well, I saw some pictures from Milan, which were taken last week, pictures of people congregating in very tightly packed public places to do their shopping and so on. I haven't been to Oxford Street recently, so I don't know if it's still comparable there or whether people are a bit more scattered and spaced out. But it looked like they were all kind of breathing all over each other, hundreds of thousands of people.
Just that guy from that guy, Super Spreader Steve, he went to France to skiing, and of course you go outdoor skiing, but there's a lot of indoor activity with shared people, like lots of chalets, there's lots of après skis with skiing, and normally these après ski places are very small pubs, jam-packed to the rafters, and those kind of places are a petri dish, you know, for breeding those kind of things, so it's a very social atmosphere, skiing, but in small contained areas, if you're not outdoors, you know, it's a very cold areas as well, so it's heating on. So I know Northern Italy's like that. That is not the norm. People are suggesting that will be like that. I don't think it is. I think Italy is, let's be honest, way above average for the rest of the world, and South Korea was. So I don't think we'll be anywhere near that. I don't know where we'll be. Of course, it's highly contagious, but we know about it now, and I think Italy just locked themselves down. But I mean, you know, like I said, it comes to Donald Trump. What he doesn't understand is that the flu kills that many people, but we sort of know the average. Okay, you have bad years of a flu, but we sort of know the average, and we have a vaccine. We don't know what the average is for coronavirus, and we don't have a vaccine. That's the issue.
I can't believe the President of the United States is tweeting that. Now, if he tweeted that a month ago, I could just about understand it, because that was still a talking point back then. Yeah. But to tweet this now, like, you know, basically just poo-pooing the whole thing, is just astonishing.
Well, he goes against all experts' advice. Did you see about that, you know? Like I said, another thing. Right, that's a good example of, so we have cruise ships, we know they're like a petri dish, they're like Italy, you know, I mean, you understand why it works on cruise ships, because you've got very confined, you know, spaces, people indoors for a lot of the time, sharing the same area, and largely they're demographic, they're not spring chickens on there, so you get a higher mortality rate, and so they are not the norm, again, but I just can't understand why Italy's like that. But Donald Trump went against the advice of on camera, they said to do something. He said, I wouldn't do that. You know, I'd keep them on there, and I'd sort them out on there, because our numbers are going to go up. And he said, all he can say about the numbers. Our numbers, yeah, he wanted a little below average.
You know, about his numbers, and we'll have to wait and see whether this, you know, I mean, if he's proven to be, you know, really, really wrong in this, and a lot of Americans end up dying unnecessarily because he was too blasé, then maybe it will affect his election prospects, who knows?
But yeah, well, that's the thing, though. That's the thing. I think this may be the massive, I know it's a horrible thing to say this, but this may be the massive banana skin that will trip him up, the economy, because he's championed himself on the stock market and jobs and the economy, and apparently this is the most embarrassing thing for presidents, is not to win a second term, because you have to really mess up, because the odds are in your favour. Yeah. It's like 76% of a presidents anyway get through the second term. If the economy is going good, it's more than 90s, so the chances, but if the economy trashes on this, then, you know, I saw something on CNN actually, but if it's a bit worrying if it does sweep America, because their healthcare system, you know, for poor people is not good. So it could really, you know, catch on there. Anyway, go back to that sort of drug story.
I will do. But just quickly, Donald Trump, the hilarious thing with him, of course, is that he's been showing off all the way up as the stock market goes up. You know, look, it's at an all-time high, and it's all thanks to me. And the moment it starts falling, he's blaming the fake news.
Blaming somebody else. He takes the credit,
But yeah, quickly before we end, then back to Inovio Pharmaceuticals, because I thought I should stick up for them a little bit after what you said and what I'd been saying. And in their favour, okay, Ebola, yes, they were developing Ebola vaccine and it hasn't come to fruition. They were doing the same with Zika, hasn't come to fruition. But the difference this time, of course, is that Ebola and Zika kind of fizzled out a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. So they were no longer priorities for any profit making company that's producing a vaccine, because it turned out that they weren't massive epidemics as had been feared, whereas this is already a pandemic and could become far, far worse. So they've already been told by the White House, we're going to expedite you to create this vaccine, so they may be able to jump over a lot of hurdles to get a coronavirus vaccine going a lot more quickly than they would with a normal vaccine for any other illness. That's the thing, the White House will open doors for them if it's that urgent, and it clearly is that urgent.
Yeah, but
it'll happen this time.
Yeah, but thing is, was that the guy, I don't know who it was, but there's a guy they bring out at the time who's actually also looking for a virus, but he does say, he said, listen, we are going to be 18 months away from getting a vaccine, even if we go at breakneck speed, because we have to go through clinical trials, and that involves having hundreds of people involved, So, phase one, phase two, and phase three, you can't rush them. For something like this, for phase three, you have to use about, several hundred people, close to about 500-600 people. So,
yeah.
Testing has to be quite rigorous. Cause
and actually,
if you start
that
killing
was the
people,
problem they had with testing. They said that with testing previous vaccines on things like Ebola and Zika, is that you need a lot of people who actually have the illness, and unless it's really widespread, that can be difficult to come by.
I'm just looking at the stats. Actually, look at this: total cases per million population, right, of coronavirus. China's 56 cases per million, Italy's 151, and South Korea's 146, whereas Iran is 85, and even that was quite a hot spot. France is 21, so Italy is seven times what France is, and Britain is down, where are we? We're 4.7. So is something going on in Italy? I don't understand what the heck it is, but it's not the norm, So anyway, but my thing is this. I genuinely think we are, I said on a video on the weekend, what's your thoughts? I said, I think we are coming to a period of time where we'll probably see the best opportunity for earning money in stocks and shares since the financial crisis. You only get that when you have a big sell-off and valuations come back to the normal and some bargains around. Warren Buffett knew that as the valuation of the stock market was going up, he was going more into cash because you can't get bargains that high. The risk goes up as the share prices go up because valuations are stretched.
What you're saying was backed up by Mark Minervini. Do you know this guy? He's written some best-selling books like Think and Trade Like a Champion and various things like that. He's Trade Like a Stock Market Wizard, that kind of. Well, he was famously featured in Stock Market Wizards, the book by Jack Schwager. That's the investment classic. So anyway, he's still up and about and he's still trading and he has a service and all the rest of it. And he was saying, this is what he said yesterday, my gut says we may need to go lower on the indexes, but I think worst case scenario is 25 to 30% off the all-time high, peak to trough. I think this will be looked back on as a cyclical bear market meltdown within a secular bull market. So he's kind of looking at this as like 1987. And certainly the chart looks like 1987 because, of course, in 1987, the market just rose really high and then fell off a cliff. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what's happened this time. It hasn't been one of those slow rolling over situations like 2008 or the dot-com crash where we had ample warning that everything was going bad because the market went high and then formed a very slow topping pattern, which people like me, trend followers, love because the trend was literally bending. This time it wasn't bending, it broke. And so that kind of implies, for a chartist like him at least, that this isn't like those other times, that maybe this is like 1987. And what happened in 1987 was you got a massive crash and then the market reached a bottom very quickly and started recovering and recovered relentlessly until it was back to where it had been before within a couple of years. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it is plausible. possible. It is. This is a one-off shock. Mm-hmm. If world governments manage to get their act together enough to avoid massive economic damage, then this could be a relatively unpleasant but short-term shock economically, and therefore stock market could start recovering relatively quickly.
I do think this was I think it'd be maybe a bit longer, because I think we are stretched anyway, and this is the catalyst. This is a straw that broke the camel's back. But when you come down to it, if you look at the figures, the last 53 bear market corrections in 1928. The average drawdown is 23% from the peak to the trough, and it takes around about 207 days. We are about 53 days in since the peak. So we've got about another 150 days for average. And maybe about another couple of percent, because we were down 20%. We've just gone up by 3%, so we need to come down. If we're going to move the average, come down about 5-6% again, and then we'll move back up. So, that's it. They don't last for long, and I think, but it could get there. Anyway, lovely stuff, marvellous. Thank you very much, Glenny, and we'll speak you next week.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I usually say good. I should have said good.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Lloyds Banking Group. And it's up 6% today to 43.7 pence. At four, Premier Oil. Down, 50% yesterday? It's up 7% today. Not a massive bounce. At three and two, it's Royal Dutch Shell PLC and Royal Dutch Shell B. Now, if you are a UK-based investor, it is best, if you are going to invest in Shell, to take the RDSB. That's the B, the Shell, because obviously they're dual-listed, but they are incorporated in Holland. I think it's Holland, yeah. But anyway, anywhere else is A, but for us it's B. That's for dividend purposes. So, RDSB sticker there. It's at number two as well. So people are following both. You don't need to follow both. Follow one. And that's the B version. Number one, most followed companies, Open Orphan. Of course, Cahill was on the podcast, up 3% to just over 6 pence. All right. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, or most read and most liked, these are Safe State Trading Statement. At four, UK Oil and Gas, Dry Oil Flows to Service Water Shutoff Programme. At three, Improved Mine Plan, Increased Production Output by 100%. There's no name on that. It's ACP again, up 25%, Armadale Capital. It's a good day to release RNS on today, actually. Open Orphan. At two, publication of positive results in journal. As Cahill said, there is a bit of an institutional seller in there, which hopefully they're getting out. And do you know what? The news they've released recently should see this go higher, really, I believe. But you have the market sell-off and a seller in there. And also, number one, most liked RNS, came from Encondesi Energy, up 5% a day. And the news is a general update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.